Okay, we're on.
If I could put this, let's say, in your... Do you have a breast pocket? Yeah, okay. Okay. Just hide that behind there. That's perfect. Thanks.
So our sound guy who works at the university decided to put some music on for the beginning of the class, and he chose the exact same piece that I put on yesterday.
I was wondering what I was playing. I was like, did Mirza beat me in here somehow? That's funny.
Put on at the beginning of our class yesterday.
And it was from the same collection of music?
No, it's from his. We have different devices, and so it's the same piece.
As it should be.
Are we ready to start here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. Before we say the invocation, maybe let's go around and do names one more time just to get to know each other a little better. And if there's anything that you'd like to add about how you're feeling today or in general, feel free. I'm Satya. And I'm looking forward to going into today's topic because it's a special one for me and one that I'm continually trying to develop and learn myself. So any attention given to it is nice for me to be able to have.
I'm Samuel Velayat. I'm really glad to be here. I've been trying to come and to your gathering every day and haven't had really the opportunity. So I'm really grateful and really look forward to it.
Nancy, glad to be here as well. I've been just appreciating the practices of opening and groundedness.
John Fazel, and I'm sort of reintegrating myself into Sufi path. Feels good, and I feel relaxed enough to absorb some of what I'm presenting.
Just to be here.
I'm Kay. I'm Zainab. Shane.
I'm glad to be back.
And Janaya, I really enjoyed the work. It's a very compelling topic. And I didn't even look at the topic today.
It'll be a surprise.
I just looked at the topic. Yeah, it's important. Oh, good.
My name is Mirza, and just dropping down into our final afternoon, and this present moment, which is our topic today.
Present moment. So maybe we could fade out the music. I don't know if he's up there.
I'll do it.
Okay. Oh, he's there. Yeah. Thank you. And we'll begin with the invocation. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And those words, illuminated souls, are kind of taking on a special meaning. If you were at Pirzia's session this morning, he spoke about light and its all-pervading nature. And there's something about those words of the invocation and the words of Murshid and his prayers and the words of the Gayan, of his writings, where as you go through your life experience and take in new teachings and new information, they can suddenly take on a whole new meaning, even if you've said them thousands of times. So our topic for today is witnessing God in the present moment. And this is something that I believe takes a lot of time and a lot of practice to really develop the capacity to do this continually. And so what I'd like to talk about today are some of the ways that one can begin to approach this idea of witnessing God in the present moment. And when I speak about witnessing God, it's not so much that a person observes God like you're watching a movie, or that it's a dual relationship. It's more along the lines of, in our session yesterday, we talked about when the ultimate state of ecstasy is reached. It's this inexplicable joy beyond words, beyond language, and the source of revelation. And so it goes beyond witnessing as an outside observer might bear witness to something or witness something. It's more participatory, and there's also something in that relationship of witnessing where in our class on love, we talked about how God is saying, "Do you love me? Do you love me?" And we're saying, "Do you love me? Do you love me?" And in the witnessing is when there is no doubt or separation. It just is. It just is. So when Sekhawat Ali Khan was doing his morning attunement, he was singing this beautiful poem. I just kind of caught a little glimpse of it. I hope I remember the words, but it was something like, "Let my whole body become eyes so I can see the beauty of my beloved Murshid." And it just was so gorgeous, this image of just with your full body, with your full self, with your full experience, becoming the eyes to see. And then there's something happening where when you can witness from that perspective, that is the divine witnessing itself, witnessing the beauty of its creation through you. Not separate, just one being being fully known, being fully expressed in that present moment. So, how does one approach it? So, in Murshid's writings, he speaks about intoxication and how one goes through life in kind of a state of intoxication with one's own affairs, with our problems, with kind of being distracted by the pleasures of everyday life. And while we've been here, so we brought our children on this trip, and it's the first time they've ever been on a kind of a family trip with us. And, you know, they've been so excited to ride a plane and to go to Portland. And this whole time, you know, they've been running around the campus. And today we went and we said, okay, we're going to go explore Portland. We're going to go, you know, see the bookstore and see downtown. And they're like, but this is Portland. You know, we're in Portland. We're in Portland. And it's just so charming that they're in their innocence. You know, everything they see here is so different from our home. This is Portland. And they have no need to go beyond that in their perspective, in their experience. You know, they're kind of looking at us like we're crazy. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is Portland. So, you know, in Murshid's writings on intoxication, it reminds me of that because, you know, he speaks about that intoxication, just kind of how it can limit your viewpoint and limit your perspective from being aware of the scale of our existence and the nuance of what it means to be part of something that is so beyond what we can normally comprehend with our experience. And I feel like Pirzia's teaching on light this morning was very relevant because light doesn't have a boundary exactly. It just kind of goes and goes and goes. And, you know, that sense of space and of kind of limitlessness about light is very relevant to helping a person reach outside of our normal kind of limited perspective in order to become fully present to the moment in order to witness God. So one means of kind of breaking through the intoxication of everyday existence is purification. And Murshid has a lot of writing on purification, and he says, mental purification is the only method by which one can reach the spiritual goal. And purification can be done through a number of stages. The stages that he gives are, you know, kind of first, well, let's see, first you can you can see, you know, the viewpoint of another as kind of the first step. You can try to get outside of your limited mode, and you can clear your impressions, letting go of the attachment to the negative impressions that we are kind of continually bombarded with, and the you know, thoughts that don't serve us, thoughts that are kind of these kind of distractions of the mind that are kind of mental intoxication. And then to identify with what one is not. So to kind of really kind of reach outside of that mode of seeing ourselves in our kind of limited states and start to really identify with, you know, what if we're greater than what we appear to be and what we feel like we are. So purification is a way of kind of shedding those impressions and beliefs and concepts that kind of form the framework of what we believe are the boundaries of our existence, and that kind of keep those walls of separation alive. So in IIT Sufism, one practice that we can do in order to purify the mental state is working with the breath. And you know, there are a lot of ways to use the breath in conjunction with nature. And nature is such a wonderful purifying force, because the elements are these various kind of tools and methods that we can use in order to purify. So, for example, if, and Murshid writes about this, but if you have, you know, a negative impression or something that you really want to get rid of, you know, you could write it on a piece of paper and you could burn it, or you can tear it into bits and let it fly in the air, or you could bury it, or you could wash, or you can, you know, get in the stream and let the water just kind of wash away the impurities. And there's something about using these kind of forces of nature and these elements of nature as kind of the tools, and it's and we are from nature, and so sending those impressions back into their elemental forms is just a very natural way to purify one's mental state and to kind of shed the detritus, is that the right word? Detritus. It's a funny word. But the detritus of just kind of the film that can kind of come over us as we go through our lives. Because it's not easy. It's not easy to walk around in a state of purification every day when, you know, horrible things are happening on the news and someone says a mean thing to you and you have a difficult job to do. And so these are very practical tools to use in order to reach a state of mental purification. So purification is the first aspect. And after that, we're going to talk about one other aspect, which is kind of a further stage of mental purification. But what I'd like to do first is let's practice the purification breaths together. Because this is a wonderful preparation for kind of getting into the cleanliness of breath and the meditative atmosphere in order to really be present in the present moment, and in order to be able to be a witness for God. And if you haven't done the elemental breaths before, this is a practice that anyone can do anytime. Murshid recommends doing this in the morning, and standing is great, although we'll sit today, but standing in kind of a natural spot out on your deck, or when I was growing up, my dad would always just be standing outside in the morning, and I'd be like, what are you doing? but that was just his morning ritual, and it's a wonderful morning practice to kind of start the day with a clear slate. So if we could find a comfortable spot. And, you know, I've been a student on this path for many years, and anytime someone led the elemental breaths, I would kind of always get a little worried sometimes, because it's supposed to be five breaths, and then if I was like done with my five, I like wasn't sure what to do, and like, do I just keep doing that thing? Or like, there's something about practicing in a group where sometimes you're not sure if you're doing the right thing, you know, at the right time. So if we're not all on the same rhythm, just stay with that breath until we move on. Just do what feels natural, so you have permission to breathe as you see fit. So taking a nice deep breath just to kind of clear and settle. And the first breath is the earth breath. And we'll draw in from the nose and out through the nose. Drawing the clean energy up through the soles of the feet. Exhaling all impurities back down. Breathing softly into the belly. And let the pure energy from the earth come all the way up. Doesn't have to stop anywhere. Can come right through to the top of your head and back down. Feeling the connectedness of the ground that supports us. The strength of the magnetism of the earth. And the dirt and the soil can take all bad impressions we have. It can take anything we have to give it. Turning to the water breath, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Imagining pure, clean water pouring down on the top of our heads. Washing, cleansing, exhaling any impurities through the mouth, feeling the refreshment that comes after rain cool and clean. And turning now to the fire breath, in through the mouth and out through the nose. Imagining a furnace in your belly. Burning hot and bright. Incinerating any impurities. And the exhalation is a fine, golden, radiant light. Feeling the warmth and the peace. And turning to the air breath, in through the mouth, out through the mouth. Imagining perhaps being on a high mountain with the wind whipping across your body. Pulling along any impurities, dissolving them into the air. There's an atmosphere of freedom, perhaps exhilaration. Feeling the release and the relief of any impure impressions being taken away by the wind. Inhaling pure, clean air. Now breathing naturally through the nose, in and out. Let all the elements mingle into the ether breath. Sensing the subtlety of feeling cleansed, purified. letting that energy be absorbed by your cells. And as we relax and open our eyes, see if you can keep that atmosphere with you. So in Murshid's writings on purification, it says the later forms of purification are to free yourself from a form and have a sense of the abstract. And this is approaching the state that is helpful for witnessing God in the present moment and being witnessed through. And in my own thinking and reading, I've found a lot of juice in the philosophy of Stoicism, because it's kind of all about how to identify with a greater worldview so that the intoxications of life don't distract us from our purpose. And there's also an emphasis on being natural, one's natural state of being, like the olive that we talked about yesterday, the olive that ripens and falls, thanking its mother, praising the tree it grew on, so that when we're here, we can be focused not on the distractions of life, but on our purpose, which in Sufism is to remember where we came from, our origins, to remember that we'll be returned there. And so I have a couple quotes. Our inward power, when it obeys nature, reacts to events by accommodating itself to what it faces, to what is possible. It needs no specific material. It pursues its own aims as circumstances allow. It turns obstacles into fuel. As a fire overwhelms what would have quenched a lamp, what's thrown on top of the conflagration is absorbed, consumed by it, and makes it burn still higher. So that's one way to kind of get fuel from our bad impressions or our struggles or our obstacles. To see them not as something to run from, but to strengthen us as we purify ourselves, as we use them as fuel for the fire. And then along the same kind of elemental lines, accept whatever happens as necessary and familiar, flowing like water from that same source and spring. And so to see all of the events of our lives not as misfortunes or kind of mishaps that distract us from our purpose and detract from our purpose and from our meaning, but to see them in fact as necessary, that all of those bad impressions are part of our lives, and if we see them as coming from the same source that we're all kind of headed for, as natural events, just like calamities happen in nature, then that's kind of a helpful tool for how to not let them overwhelm us with their bad feelings or their meaning. And a similar way to kind of get a broader perspective is to consider the greatness of space, like how Pirzia was mentioning in his talk this morning. When we see ourselves on Earth and then in this galaxy, and this galaxy is just a tiny piece of outer space and just the sheer scale of everything. And in fact, I saw this video on YouTube that kind of totally blew my mind, that was about the scale of black holes. And, you know, something like, you know, it shows kind of like our sun and how many of our suns would fit in a black hole. And then it goes to a bigger black hole and a bigger black hole. And all of a sudden it's like 20 million suns. And they're just like, you know, they make this huge layer and you're like, wow, that's a huge layer. And then the layer stacks up into this giant block. And then there's like all these different blocks coming down. And you're like, ah, it's just too big. And then it kind of pans over and there's our tiny little Milky Way. There's our tiny little galaxy. And it's like, doop, we're like this tiny dot. And so when we think about, you know, kind of the typical obstacles that we encounter in our lives and then kind of zoom out to this grand perspective, it's hard for them to kind of hold that much power and, you know, kind of seem as important. And similarly, when we consider the scale of time and how our lives seem so long to us and all of these things are happening day to day, moment to moment, and, you know, it's just this blip in history. And in fact, in a black hole, you know, time doesn't even really exist. So there's something about, you know, kind of zooming out to these kind of greater perspectives that can kind of help one shed the, you know, the attachment to the intoxication of everyday life. So we're going to try a meditation. And this is normally, I believe, more effective out in nature. So we're going to stay in here today just for the ease of the group, but if you ever want to try this out in nature, that's where I've had the most success with this. But we're going to have a little meditation on being in the present moment and becoming witnesses. So does anyone want to stretch before we... Maybe we'll stretch for just a minute, just to break up all the sitting, if you want to just have a minute to take care of your body. Find a comfortable position. Turning within. And placing the attention on the breath in your own body. Mm-hmm. make sure as you breathe that you're breathing into your own body. Sometimes it can be off to the left or the right or somewhere else. This is going to happen in your own actual body. And just remembering one more time the poem from this morning. Let my whole body become eyes so that I can see the beauty of my beloved. So focusing on the breath, place your attention on the inhalation, the exhalation, and the pause in between. And this is using the power of concentration that Pirzia spoke about this morning. Concentrating on breathing. Returning to the breath if distracting thoughts come along. Inhale, exhale, pause, repeat. As you breathe, see if you can notice where you are on the spectrum between effort and relaxation. And see if you can adjust that knob so it's just right. Not too forceful, not too relaxed. Get your own meter just right, so that breath feels very natural. And now see if you can become aware, instead of focusing on the form of breathing, focus on or become aware of breathing itself, the very act of breathing, as it happens to be happening in your body. See if you can become aware almost of being breathed. And being breathed is the only thing happening. If you invite that atmosphere of breath, the experience of breath, invite it to participate fully in you. That can be the only thing happening in this moment. The past is over and done with. The future is not here yet. There's just this one breath you're taking right now. If you can relax into that and invite that experience of this one breath fully, see if you can become aware of the space all around you. The Portland outside of Portland. And see if you can sense that it wants to be seen. It wants its delights to be tasted. It wants to be known. It wants to see. And maintaining the relaxation into the experience of this breath, see if you can open your eyes without really seeing. And we'll just open our eyes without really looking for a moment and close them on your own time. See if you can be aware of being breathed with your eyes open or closed. Becoming a container of witnessing. Considering the beauty of nature and what a spectacle to behold. Staying with breath. And when you're ready, you can just return to your normal state of being. Trying to merge those two states, keep a little of the witness with you.
There's a Zen story about a teenage girl, and she lives in a small village, and she's a little bit wild, and she loves all of the young men in the village, and so she's always going off for secret trysts in the moonlight and out in the garden, by the lake. And eventually, she gets pregnant. And she doesn't know what to do. She's scared and she tries to hide it. But eventually she can't hide it anymore, and her parents, who are very strict, discover that she's pregnant and they demand to know who the father is. She's very scared, and so she says the name of the monk who lives up in a cave above the village. And her family is very upset, and they tell the rest of the villagers, who are very upset. We always thought that he was such a pious monk. How could he have done this? And they take the baby. And all of the villagers march up there and confront him and say, "This is your son." And the monk opens his eyes from his years of silent meditation and says, "Is that so?" And accepts the child. And even though he knows nothing about being a parent, he immediately sets to the task and learns how to make diapers and go and get milk from the goats that live on the mountainside and sing lullabies to put the baby to sleep. And he becomes this wonderful father to this baby. And the days turn into weeks, and months, and years, and the child grows in his arms and becomes his most cherished love. And he Meanwhile, the girl in the village also grows up, and she sees all of her friends get married and start families and have their own children. And she regrets giving away her own child. And so she finally comes clean and admits to her parents that she had made up the story. And they're so upset, and they're upset with the monk, and they get the villagers again, and they go back up to the cave. And they say, "That's not your child." And the monk says, "Is that so?" And he lets the child go back to the mother and back to the village. And he returns to his life alone and his solitary practice. So this is someone who accepts the present moment, no matter what it brings, no matter how surprising it is. He doesn't worry about what could have been or what should have been. He doesn't worry about what other people think of him. He doesn't think about what happened in the past to lead to this moment or what's going to happen in the future. He only looks at the circumstances of this moment, how best to act. And it's not a passive acceptance. It's an active acceptance. He looks at what is needed in this moment, and he becomes that. Whether it's to be a father or to be alone, whether it's to accept a gift or to lose. Yes.
I have a question too. So, what's the difference between acceptance and submission for you? And, I mean, from this story, that's a beautiful story, but I think that a lot of time people do get not particularly clear on what they're in control of. To accept and which parts I can change.
Mm-hmm.
And to be frankly honest, I don't really think that the child would be really happy with their mother. Like, I don't think that there was an investment to ask of my kid. from the story.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're asking a difficult question, and I don't know the answer. I don't know if the child will be better off with the monk or with the mother. And I don't think the monk knows either. All he has is that moment with the child. The Sufis say, you know, all that is this moment. All that is this moment. There's actually not a future for the child, or the monk, or the mother. There's only the present. And so, you have to decide what to do in the present, and maybe it is to to give away the child, and maybe it is to hold on to the child. And I don't know the answer to that.
Is it wise to not sense the future?
Hmm?
Is it wise to not sense the future?
To not consider the future.
Yeah,
this is a good question. You know, my I had a friend in college, and we would often drink these beers made by the Trappist monks. You know the Trappist monks. and I very good beer, right? And I did a little reading on the Trappist, and I discovered that every night before they went to sleep, they sort of made I don't know the terminology of this in monastic life, but they made a full reconciliation, this may be the last day of my life, and so I'm going to be in a state of, I may die, the world may end tonight. And so I was trying to tell my friend about that, of kind of convincing him, you know, they live for this, just for this moment, and every moment might be, you know, your last. He was very quick to respond, well, then how do they make the beer? Because you have to put in some work. You have to anticipate a future. I think the future does exist, but it exists only in the present moment. And it unfolds in the present moment.
If I could say something also about your question, which is such a great question, you know, that I think that when you get into should I submit or should I accept what's happening, I think it gets into this relationship between fate and free will. You know, how much leeway do we have over, how much agency do we have over our own lives when things can just be plucked from us at any moment, and catastrophe could strike, and you know, it's this kind of dance between going about one's way, you know, the best that we can, and then at times these calamities do strike, and you know, I'm not sure about that monk, because you know that his agency over his you know, over this child is kind of an iffy topic, but when something dramatic does happen, like a relationship ends suddenly and one has no control over, you know, the circumstances, then, you know, I think that the thing about the present moment is, like, how can you accept what just seems to be completely unacceptable in that moment? Just seems so traumatic that one cannot, you know, go on another breath, another moment, and then you get into just, you know, breath by breath, that's how to get through, and, you know, kind of using some of these tools that we've talked about.
It could also be in, when you think sometimes you go on in a relationship forever, just over and over, and you're waiting for the moment. And when the moment comes, it comes so fast that it's necessary. And when it does come and go, and you free yourself of that, I think that is like somehow you wanted it, but it's also a sort of a divine presence behind it that's made this all happen. But it's in that, you know, it's like such a quick decision, and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's amazing.
Brings to mind me, for me, when I was going through a very messy divorce, which caused me to go into a lot of PTSD stuff around my childhood, and it was a pretty hellacious period. And I remember at one point I stopped and cleaned the refrigerator. But the way I cleaned the refrigerator is, there'd be something in the refrigerator, and I would breathe out, reach in, take it, breathe in, bring it out to me, breathe out, set it down, breathe in, breathe in. I mean, just this, it took me hours to clean that refrigerator. But it brought me into the present moment and all this stuff that had been going on of, well, what's the right thing to do? What should I do here? All the reactivity, all the pain, all the what-ifs were all cleared away. And made it so stable then to make the next step. You know, it's just being able to get out of that what if and that if, you know, for the past and what if for the future, and just be really present to the present, just brought me into a place of blessing.
To me, it's really about defining my area of control. So this is what I'm in control of. I'm in control of my thoughts for the most part, and my actions and my emotions. And I mean, there's some area where I have a bit of control on that, but I continuously expand that. There are some areas that I'm not really having control over. So kind of like just having the clarity, where do I have control, where I don't have control, and then don't worry about those. Cause I don't have control over the word piece. I don't have control over the politics. I have control whether I'm going to vote or not. So it really brings me to the places where I can influence things, and if I cannot influence, I'm just going to walk away from that and not really think about that. In terms of the story itself, and I've heard like stories like that, and I think that they show the aspiration to strive, maybe strive for, but they don't really show like the massiveness of the human process. And it, to me personally, it was really hard to not judge myself for not being there. And I might never be there. I might not want to be there. Like, I personally want to have a secure, good attachment. I don't want to have an attachment at all, you know? And so it's important for me in a lot of spiritual teaching to acknowledge that, this is a kind of like the highest expression of the stage that we may never achieve. But we are here now, and there is some areas where I could just like have a little step along. And this is the area how it's gonna look a bit better, because if, for example, like this chapter, the non-attachment and humility, I think that it's kind of almost like the highest expression of the control versus submission. Then you have authority. Without skipping the authority, you have the misunderstanding, where is the humility and where is the submission. But authority is kind of like the intermediate stage of it, because there is no like the type of acceptance without standing in the fullness of your power. And what do we do to get there?
Yes. You know, one part of this story is the narrative of the story is talking about an external condition of the villagers, but I think the story is also pointing towards the internal conditions that we are trying to accept. So in Sufism, there are two different states of being called Qabd and Bast, which are contraction and expansion. That sometimes we feel joy and happiness and inspiration, and we feel our heart opening and going outward, and we want to just follow it out. We want to follow that experience out as far as it'll go. And at other times we feel this contraction of pain or of loss. And we have different responses to that. We might try to avoid it or distract ourselves or think about some regret in the past that led up to it, or the future. And the Sufis say, if you experience expansion or contraction, you should do the same thing, which is to stay on your prayer mat. To stay with whatever that feeling is that is arising in you. And to not let the feeling take you somewhere else, or to not try to pull the feeling somewhere else, but to just allow the feeling itself to be your guide and to stay with it. And so a lot of the practices and techniques we're talking about to be present to the present moment have to do with being present to what is arising within us in that moment. The Sufi symbol for the present moment is a sword, the blade of a sword. And they say that if you are oriented towards the present moment, if you're aware of it, you're facing it head on, then you will always be coming against the face of the sword, which is smooth. And if you're oriented towards the past or the future, you're oriented towards the way that you wish the world could have been, then you're always going to face the wrong direction and be coming up against the blade of the sword. Not just once, but over and over again, every moment. Junaid says this is most forms of suffering are redemptive. They lead to some good lesson. This form isn't, because it's that cutting that cutting of the only thing that is real, which is this.
There's also something about coming up against what is arising without wanting to fix it or change it. I think that's something that can really take us out of the present moment, is not the thing itself, but all of the judgments that come up about, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that way, or I have to change this, or I have to address this, or I have to fix this. And all of a sudden you're in a space where you can't be present to the present moment, to what's really just arising.
I guess that's implying the indifference that is sometimes important. And you observe the emotion rather than being it.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Let's end with a prayer.
Okay. Say the prayer for the universal. O thou who art the maker, molder, and builder of the universe, build with thine own hands the universal, our temple for thy divine message of love, harmony, and beauty. Amen.
Thank you so much for being here, and a wonderful evening.
Less. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.